the Extra Magic Hour, a Disney Parks podcast. Here are your hosts, Anne Ravanos and Dimitri Ravanos.
Welcome to another edition of the Extra Magic Hour. I am Dimitri.
And I'm Kat.
And we are your hosts for the week. Coming up a little bit later on, Josh Taylor from Network 1901 and their very cool new mini-series, The World That Never Was, will be our guest this week. But for now, Kat, what say we jump into the news?
Okay, so the menus for the Food & Wine Festival have come out, and I don't want to go into detail for all of them, but I am going to say a few. And let me tell you, it looks delicious, and it makes me really excited for my trip in October.
There's only one thing I want to know, and that is, does China have the Mongolian beef sandwich this year?
I think so. Hold on. Let me check. Let me see if I can find it. So remember last week I said that I was not a big foodie.
Right.
And I guess I kind of lied because I'm a big dessert person. And so there were a lot of desserts that looked delicious.
Yeah. Has it been the last 2 years? Both years we've been there during the Food & Wine Festival. And Food & Wine is, I mean, that's a whole day of touring the park.
Yeah. So what did you ask if China had?
Did they have the Mongolian beef sandwich on the steam bun?
It does not look like they have that. They have the Beijing roasted duck on a steam bun.
Oh, that was my favorite thing. It's so simple. Like, it's no different than the kind of Chinese food you would get at a strip mall. It's just they happen to put it on a steam bun, and for whatever reason, it was my favorite thing they had there.
That makes it all the better. So one thing that looked really good was in France. First there were two things. One was the soup, and I really need to brush up on my French. But basically, it's French onion soup with Gruyere cheese, which is delicious. Sounds delicious. But then also they have the creme brulee, caramel and chocolate, or I guess caramel chocolate creme brulee is what it comes out to an English translation.
I will never pass up a good creme brulee.
Oh my gosh, it's like my favorite thing ever. I love creme brulee.
There's a place here in North Carolina called Arise that does a creme brulee donut that leaves a little bit to be desired. But creme brulee overall.
That sounds delicious, and I'm not a big donut person. Belgium has two waffle selections, and then they let's see, hold on. There was another dessert that sounded so good, and I was like, oh my gosh, I am so glad this is a snack option. And I can't seem to find it right now. Oh, well, in Germany, one of the menu items, Schnickkindeln, I don't know, I'm very bad at German. I never took German. But it's it says pasta gratin with ham and cheese, and anytime you put cheese and pasta, you can't miss it. It kind of sounds like mac and cheese, but
yeah. Well, I mean, but anytime you put any kind of topping with mac and cheese, I'm down.
Oh yes, definitely. So this just makes me really excited. And most, if I'm not wrong, all of the food menu items, are part of the Disney Dining Plan snack credit. Which makes me even happier because we did the Disney Dining Plan. I know you don't like that, but we did the Disney Dining Plan, and so it makes us really excited.
I think that at your hotel they are going to offer you the opportunity to buy a Food & Wine Festival gift card. Like, they're very cognizant of if they put more Food & Wine Festival specific money in your hand, you will use it.
Yeah, probably. And that's definitely something me and my girls are going to spend some time at.
Yeah, you should. Absolutely.
And if you want to look at the menu, just go to, I'll just post it on the Facebook page, the Extra Magic Hour Facebook page.
Okay, cool.
So you guys can find it. Next has to do with Food & Wine as well, and for you annual pass holders, you can get a neat souvenir for free when visiting the Food and Wine Festival this year. You can get a free etched glass tumbler, but you have
Oh,
to
cool.
visit. Yeah, you have to visit Food and Wine 3 times between September 14th and November 14th, and you have to make sure you have your animal pass holder card or your magic band to enter. And after visiting 3 times, take your photo ID and pass holder admission to Innovations East to pick up your tumbler.
That's awesome. I wish I had known that last year.
Yeah, and I'm kind of excited because I'm going to upgrade my tickets to annual pass holder this trip, and we just so happen to be entering Epcot 3 times.
Ah, very good.
So we'll see if I'm able to get it.
Well, cool. That's awesome. That is something very rare that they give away something for free.
I know.
Because they have all the annual pass specific merchandise.
Right. And I think part of it, well, I feel like most pass holders live in Florida, but maybe they're not counting on a bunch of pass holders to go or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe it is a way to get you down there, because it is the kind of thing that once you're there, it's very hard to not want to do.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, if you're in Epcot anyway, you want to go over there and eat all that food, particularly the countries that are not regularly represented at Epcot.
Right, right. And that makes me excited. I don't know. I'm excited for something that I could get for free.
Well, very good.
Next, we have a story that not a lot of people are talking about, but I find very interesting. So a man in Pennsylvania is suing Walt Disney World after being bitten by a snake. But here's the catch. It happened 3 years ago.
Is this the one where the snake fell out of the tree onto the guy?
No, there's not really any details. So the man states that he was bitten by a snake while swimming in one of the pools at Walt Disney World Resort, but the resort wasn't named. So like he was swimming in a pool and the snake was in the pool. The guy said that he went to find a cast member but couldn't find one. And so he attempted to take care of the situation himself by putting a towel over the snake. And while he was trying to put the towel over the snake, it reached up and bit him on his right thumb. And it landed him in the hospital for 5 full days, and he was given 16 vials of antivenom. But he says that he is still suffering effects from this, with numbness in his right hand, and sometimes he can't even use it. Now, I'm not saying that this didn't happen. I think it's very hard to believe that he was not able to find a cast member.
Yeah, it's also hard to believe that cast members would allow people in the pool with a snake in the pool. I mean,
right?
You know, look, there are situations where this could have happened. Maybe he saw the snake in the pool after hours and jumped in to get it. I don't know. I mean, like that seems like a possibility, I guess. But. But yeah, I think if you spend any amount of time down there that you sort of recognize the way cast members move, particularly around a pool, this is really hard to buy.
Yeah, I think so too. And some people are saying that he's just now bringing it up because he saw the devastating effect of the alligator incident. And so he's like, oh, well, they could have done a lawsuit. I should do this lawsuit.
Right. Yeah, and the other thing too, and this is one that really surprises me, is if he had to go to the hospital, there's no way Disney didn't know that an ambulance came to one of their resorts. And if that's the case, there's no way Disney has not followed up with him. Or at least it doesn't seem plausible to me that Disney did not follow up with him or try to do something to quote-unquote make it right already.
Right. No, I agree. Right now it says, they say that because Walt Disney World doesn't have anything in Pennsylvania, it's hard to, basically it's hard to bring to court because he's in Pennsylvania and Disney World is in Florida.
Well, wouldn't he have to bring it to court in Florida because that's where this incident happened?
Right, but he's trying to do it from Pennsylvania.
Huh. That's weird. I know that there are some laws involving cruise ships that allow you to file suit from where you bought your ticket because so many cruise ships are like registered in the Bahamas and places like that for tax reasons.
Right.
But that's obviously not the case with Disney World, which is in a central location.
Right. I don't know. It apparently something went wrong, and now the lawyer, his lawyer, is trying to file an appeal. I just think it's crazy. Like, I read this and I was like, it happened 3 years ago.
I mean, it's a weird story, and if, you know, if, I mean, to be fair to him, right, if this happened and he's within the statute of limitations and he's truly suffering, then by all means, do whatever you feel like you need to be, yeah, you know, to be made whole again. But yeah, it was 3 years ago. This is coming on the heels of the alligator thing, and also, you know, as we've just outlined, like knowing what all of us know about the way cast members move around pools, it's just hard to believe when you're just reading about it.
Right.
All right, what else is in the news?
So our rumor this week is so there's been some hype balloon testing at Disney's Caribbean Beach, which we've kind of talked about it before, but just in case someone's coming in brand new, hype balloon testing is just a way to kind for Imagineers to kind of see how if something was built, how it would be seen on all 360 degrees around the Walt Disney World Resort. So the rumor is that they are actually developing a DVC project, although nothing is confirmed or announced, but this would be the first DVC in a moderate resort. And after staying at Caribbean Beach last year, I think that, well, first of all, this is it's a massive resort.
Yeah, it's my least favorite resort on property.
We had a good time in it, but I really liked the pool, but I didn't like we were the closest resort or not resort, but area to the oh what's it called? Port Royal, and it was still an 8 minute walk.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. It's not that I didn't have fun, and you're right, the pool is great, and the fact that they have smaller pools spread around the property is great, but there is no, I don't know what the right way to say it is. It does not feel like there's any central part of that resort. You have the food court at one part, you have check-in at one part. I don't like the way that resort is laid out.
Yeah.
I've heard this rumor long before the hype balloon testing. This rumor has been floating around for a while, and one of the things that becomes a that I guess sort of slides along into this rumor is that they would be extending the Sasagula River to make it over to the DVC buildings, and then you would have the DVC people have the boat to get over to Disney Springs.
Huh.
So yeah, this one's been out there for a while. I guess we're
Yeah.
probably moving to the day when every single resort has a DVC section, right?
Do you really think like even the Value would have a DVC reset or section?
I don't know that all of them would. I could see Art of Animation.
Yeah, I could see that too. I just think I don't know. I think Caribbean Beach is the best. Well, it's the only moderate resort I've stayed at, but I think it'd be the best for a DVC. But I don't know. It's already big enough. Like, you really don't need to add an extra section. But I guess that's how they make money with the DVC people.
Yeah, see, I think that the best ones for DVC of the moderates would be Port Orleans Riverside, just because you already have the rooms that are specially themed to be Tiana's Royal guest rooms,
Yeah.
and they're so, the buildings themselves are just so beautiful at Riverside. To me, it would make a lot of sense if you're going to do a DVC at a moderate to do it there. That being said, and you know, it was funny. I was just listening to a podcast about DVC, the resorts off of property, the one at Cocoa Beach, the one at up in South Carolina, Hilton Head.
Yeah.
And you know, I find it hard to believe, or I guess I should say, I found it hard to believe that there is continuing demand for this. I can't believe that with prices rising at Disney, with more and more stuff being closed as they get ready for, you know, what at some point is going to be a spectacular renovation. I can't believe that in 2017, 2016, there's going to be the kind of demand to sustain more DVC units.
But maybe like I don't know how DVC works at all, but maybe like having a DVC unit at Caribbean Beach makes it a little bit more affordable.
Yeah, I mean
Like
that's certainly the case. You know, I know that it involves. I know we have a lot of DVC members that can clear this up, and please do
yes.
on the Facebook page. But I know it involves buying points, and obviously you would be able to use fewer points for stays at Caribbean Beach, but they all fill up so quickly.
Yeah.
So
Like I said, I have no idea how it works.
I don't know. Like obviously the demand is there. I guess I'm shocked. That the demand is there, and part of it is, and I think Anne and I have talked about this on the show, is for us that fatigue is starting to set in a little bit, and that desire to do something new, even if that something new is Disneyland as opposed to Disney World. I don't know. I've never felt like DVC would be the way to go because I don't feel like I could get my money's worth out of it.
Yeah, and you know, like when my husband and I have talked about going to Disney World, like in the future, we say that we want to stay at a different resort every time.
Right.
And who knows if that will actually happen, but you know, if you are a part of DVC, you can't really do that, from what I understand. I might be wrong on that.
Well, I mean, yeah, you sort of have to go with what is available to you at that moment. Where, yeah, no, you're right. And you know, for me, the best moderate resort's not a DVC resort, and that's French Quarter. You know, and also with DVC, I could be wrong about this, and absolutely correct me on the boards if I'm wrong about this. Are the campgrounds? I don't think there's any DVC property on at Fort Wilderness.
I don't think on the campgrounds,
But
which.
to me, like there is no better experience than staying in a cabin at Fort Wilderness.
Have you done it?
Yeah, it's awesome.
We might have to consider that. I've stayed in a cabin before, like a nice cabin, and you know, something about it is just fun.
No, it's great. I mean, it's you know, very you know, the woods around you are, it's very secluded. I mean, even though all the cabins are obviously lined up right next to each other, but you can go for a walk and you're very much surrounded by trees and not, you know, you're not seeing the Disney buses every 5 seconds and being reminded that you're in the middle of a theme park. I mean, it's great. It's just I don't think you can get your money's worth out of it unless you're going with like five people.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right, is that it for the news this week?
Yes, it is.
All right, we will talk to Josh Taylor from Network 1901 coming up today inside the Extra Magic Hour.
Hello, I'm Storybook Julius, the White Dragon Podcast Network's resident Canadian and the host of Storybook Radio, a Walt Disney World and Universal Studios podcast appearing every Wednesday here on WDPN. Walt Disney was a storyteller, and well, so am I. Now, I'm not saying that I'm as cool as Walt Disney or anything, but I'm saying that if you're looking for a unique take on the Walt Disney World and Universal Studios theme parks, with immersive looks at their stories, backstories, and histories, you've come to the right place. Head on over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Podomatic to subscribe to and download the Storybook Radio podcast each and every Wednesday. You can also check out www.storybookradio.com for more details and more content.
Hey guys, this is Corinne Chandler from Mousellaneous Discussions, the Disney television and movie talk show here on the White Dragon Podcast Network, reminding you that every Monday is Mousellaneous Monday on WDPN. Kate Smith, Kevin Kessler, and I pick a different Disney topic to discuss each week, ranging from top five lists to movie reviews to major announcements coming out of the Walt Disney Company. Then we close the show out with Kate's Disney Recipe of the Week, where she'll teach you how to make a variety of dishes only found in Walt Disney World, and I pose a trivia question to you all, meant to test your knowledge of all things Disney. So please tune in every Monday morning on iTunes, Stitcher, and WhiteDragonPodcastNetwork.com for a new and magical episode.
Nobody cares, Corinne.
Shut up, Kevin. I'm plugging your network.
Oh. Okay, keep going. I like your announcer voice.
Thank you. Mousellaneous Discussions on WDPN. Come join us and let's get magical.
So now we bring in Josh Taylor from Network 1901. And Josh, I was just talking before we started recording that I've been a fan of the way they've approached a number of their podcasts, but I'm particularly enamored with a mini-series. I don't know if that's the best way to call it, but Josh, I'll let you decide. But this mini-series they have going on called The World That Never Was, where over 6 weeks, Josh is looking at six different pavilions, attractions, and various other things that just never got past the planning stages, both at Disney World and Disneyland. So Josh, thanks so much for hanging out with me today.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time to contact me. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, like I said, I've been really enamored by it. And before we started recording, we were talking about the style you presented in. And it's almost like each one of these, and so far, I think by the time our podcast drops, you'll have three episodes out of The World That Never Was. But these almost feel like 20 to 30 minute, 60 minute pieces.
Yeah, I mean, I really love a lot of the NPR stuff. You know, that tops the iTunes charts in terms of podcasts. I've always been a huge fan of Freakonomics, This American Life, and a new show that came out not too long ago called Revisionist History. A lot of these types of shows take a more journalistic approach, and I was really excited to try that format. Instead of just a you know, press record and having a conversation.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, there's definitely value to the press record and have a conversation. But the way that Josh has gone about setting this up, there'd be no way to do a podcast with this much information in a conversational style, because each one. So the two that I've heard at the time of us recording, obviously, are the Equatorial Africa Pavilion at Epcot. And Westcott, which was supposed to come to Disneyland, and of course eventually gave way to California Adventure. If I'm thinking about it right in my head, you're averaging about four different guests/experts per show joining you for whether it's quotes or pretty good length conversations.
Yeah. So the way that I've kind of gone about recording the show, which I came from with Modern Mouse Radio, my normal show I've done for about 4 years now. I've come from the conversational background of pressing record, you know, getting a long form conversation and then kind of editing that down and posting that. So what I decided to do here was, instead of having, you know, one 30 minute conversation, I would have several 10 to 15 minute conversations with people and then take quotes or take things that were their opinions. So when I go to produce the show, like for the Equatorial Africa show, for example, I wanted to produce a lot of the facts, and when it came down to opinions, like, for example, like I got somebody who was from Uganda who was – I was talking to them while they were in Uganda, and we were talking about what it's like to live there. I don't have those facts. I don't have that opinion of what it is actually to live there, what it feels like, right? So I wanted people to come on the show, maybe not experts, but definitely people who would have unique opinions. So for that first episode, I got somebody who is another Disney podcaster who does a show completely about Disney's Animal Kingdom, which, of course, the Animal Kingdom has an Africa pavilion, but Epcot doesn't.
Right.
And then I brought on someone who was from Uganda so they could talk to me a little bit about what Africa is like and what it feels like to be there. And then I brought on somebody who's more of a social activist, of somebody who lives in New York and sees a lot of different melting pots worth of diversity, and really kind of showcase like what an African pavilion or African people could really give us in an Epcot pavilion. But I'm kind of giving most of the facts while other people are kind of giving me their opinions and feelings. I kind of approach it that way.
Right. Yeah. And so the Equatorial Africa, I think, was a really great episode to start with, because one of the big themes of that episode that continued in the Westcott episode, and I'm sure will continue at other points in the series, is the effect that society and socio-political factors have on Disney's decisions. I mean, you talk about it in the Equatorial Africa that, you know, you had countries that were supposed to be footing half the bill for this in the middle of a civil war. You talk about with Westcott, the city of Anaheim sort of rising up against it, I guess, for lack of a better term. But it's, you know, when I listen to your other show, Modern Mouse Radio, you and I were talking about this off air, that sometimes that you guys like to approach that show from a socio-political point of view and bring up topics rather than run down news. you know, I sometimes, just because I'm pursuing a second degree right now and there's a large business element to it, I sometimes think just about the cold numbers of everything. And I think you've done a really good job of showing that these other factors absolutely have an effect on the cold numbers. I mean, you can talk about divorcing emotion from these decisions all you want, but emotion for your audience does drive your bottom line. I think you've done a really good job of showing that.
Thank you. Yeah, I've really found that over time, Modern Mouse really evolved into a show that was more my personality than not. I think a really good host is a host that shows who he is, you know, or who she is.
Right.
And for me and my wife, and we always talk about, in our daily lives, we talk about politics and social issues, and we try and have meaningful conversations with ourselves, with our friends, our families. And so we thought, well, we really love Disney and we really love having these conversations, so how do we meld the two together?
Mm-hmm.
And Modern Mouse Radio in the past year or so has really become a show where we get to discuss a lot of those topics in a long form, and kind of exhaust some of these social issues that may be approaching Disney or not. We've talked about the relationship with the LGBT community that mm-hmm. Disney has. We've talked about Disney princesses and the stereotypes that may or may not go with those, and how parents with small girls should, you know, approach that accordingly. We've talked about Epcot, the original plan for Epcot, and if that is was a good idea, and some of the things that came out of that Epcot idea that have still been kind of placed into the real world. I mean, for me, and especially when I approached The World That Never Was, this new, like you said, a mini-series, we can call it that, sure. I haven't really put a name to it. So, but the idea is, I think for most people, when they go to Disney World or Disneyland or any of the Disney parks, or even to a Disney movie at their local theater, it's an escapism.
Right.
You know, it's a way to get away from the harshness of the real world. And the way that I like to approach the show is that, even though, yes, for the guest, that is correct, for the Disney company itself, they still have to face the real world issues. They kind of have to, like, be a bouncer at a club, right? Like, they let all the cool people in, but then all of the bad stuff, they kind of have to, like, you know, close the door on. You know, they still have to be the people that clean up the mess. And I really love discussing those ideas, because the real world and Disney still have to collaborate, even in the idea of making such a magical place.
Yeah, one of the things I'll get to this in a second. Let me ask you this. Going forward, what have you discovered about the attractions? And I don't know if you want to reveal what else you're going to do on the show, what your other subjects are going to be or not. Either way is fine. But what have you sort of learned about the attractions that were never built that had nothing to do with Disney's relationship with the outside world and outside forces? Because the first two episodes, you know, there were the socio-political factors in Africa at the time that stopped the Equatorial African Pavilion, or one of the factors that stopped the Equatorial African Pavilion. And then you had Anaheim basically rise up and say, we don't want Westcott here. That, you know, if you are boiling down to a root cause, that is why Westcott never got built. So the stuff that is very much on that 43 square miles of property down in Florida that Disney not only controls economically, but they control the government of, what gets in the way in situations like that?
There are a lot of situations where they do look at hard numbers. There was going to be at the studios back in the early 90s, they were going to build a Dick Tracy attraction.
Right.
That was really similar to the Indiana Jones adventure at Disneyland. It would have had, or dinosaur, you know, at Animal Kingdom. It would have had that vibe to it. But the finances came back. Dick Tracy wasn't the major success that they thought it would be. So they canceled the project. A lot of these things do come down to Disney's decision, you know, of like, we want to build this, we have this idea on the board, and then when it gets down to it, they find something else that fits better or that financially makes more sense, right? Because it's still a business. But the idea with with The World That Never Was, was I really wanted to showcase how the real world impacts Disney or Disney World or Disneyland. And Disney World, more than any other place, actually, has been impacted more with the real world than a place like Anaheim or even Disneyland Paris. Because at Epcot in particular, the World mm-hmm. Showcase was supposed to have countries, I think there's at least a dozen that they've, you know, announced at one point or another, and then things didn't happen.
I think the one that sort of got the, I don't know if it got the furthest along, but Disney was getting ready, you know, in the stages of promoting, was Israel, right?
Israel was really close. Iran was really close. Actually, I'll be visiting those in episode 6, the last of the series, because they envelope politics and religion and social issues and all kinds of things. So there'll be it'll be the toughest conversation to have. It'll be the toughest show to put together for me because there's so much that goes into it. But there's also the Soviet Union. Russia was going to go in there at one point. Brazil was only a few years ago they talked about putting that in. Equatorial Africa, which was the first show I did. And there's so many more that have come and gone and have not worked out.
And then also you think about just the individual things that, whether it's a particular team of Imagineers or Imagineering in general, have talked about, oh, we wanted to do this with this pavilion.
Right.
And the thing that comes to mind first for me anyway is the Godzilla roller coaster that they were kicking around for Japan. There is so much about that entire park that, while it feels like, you know, this is a very cool departure from what we knew theme parks to be in 1982, well, this might be a little harsh, but I'll just say it. It does feel like that there is a lot of failure in some places in Epcot. We didn't get what, not forget Walt, we didn't get what the Imagineers were telling us we were going to get out of this park.
And I think they've had to really reconfigure what that park is, especially mm-hmm. when you take in the consideration of its audience, right? The people really love the idea of the, at least the hardcore fans really love the idea of this edutainment, this idea that you're going to learn about new technologies, you're going to learn about world culture. While at the same time, we're going to have a fun day at the park. And I think that Disney has seen that the mass audience really wants thrill rides, they want characters, they want kind of what they did with California Adventure. California Adventure initially was not Disney-fied, and then they Disney-fied it and people loved it more. So it's like they're kind of doing that with Epcot now. You know, they replaced the Seas with the Seas with Nemo and Friends.
Right.
And there's been some backlash from some people, but there's been praise from other people. And I think they're really trying to figure out, you know, however many years later now, what Epcot is going to be in the future, because it is a difficult park to balance that idea of technology and world culture and truly representing people correctly
mm-hmm.
while still trying to be acceptable for a mass audience, business-wise.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of the things that I think gets lost in both sections of Epcot, Future World and World Showcase, is Disney definitely has characters and IPs they can use for edutainment. It's just like, you know, you think about the Guardians of the Galaxy attraction that's rumored to be going in where Universe of Energy is, you know, that's going to be a roller coaster. And even with the best intentions, how much can you learn on a roller coaster? You know, I mean,
right.
I think they did a really good job when they rethemed El Rio de Tiempo to use the Three Caballeros. They did a pretty good job still of showcasing Mexican culture. And I feel like they could do that with areas that either need to be refurbished or areas like Wonders of Life that are just sitting vacant right now.
Yeah, so I mean, there are a lot of reasons, right, that, like, things don't get built or things change over time. Business is a big part of that.
Right.
I mean, you going to school for that, you kind of know how business can really impact itself, you know?
Yeah, and we've talked about this on the show before, is that Epcot, those spaces in Epcot, you walk past and go, oh, why aren't they doing anything here?
Yeah.
Well, they are. You just have to pay $20,000 a night to rent that pavilion out, and then you'll get to see what they're doing in there.
Right, and as long as people are renting it out, or as long as, you know, they're making money, then it'll stay that way.
Right.
And so business is business, but, you know, for me, I love the idea of what the world that never was, in really discussing how outside of financial backgrounds, how the rest of the world kind of feels about Disney. And I've talked to a lot of people and interviewed a lot of people who aren't even Disney fans. I just got off the phone earlier with a doctor of American history from the University of Colorado, and we talked at length about American history and about Disney and its relationship with American history, because we're doing an upcoming show about the Disney's America Park that never got built, and the huge reason behind that, because it was marched on and protested by tons of people. Disney was kind of backed up against a wall, and they kind of backed out of it. That whole show is going to be about American history and how you can truly represent American history. If Disney could do it, if there would ever be one place that you could go, or if America is too diverse, it's too big, you know, to put into one place. I'm going to be doing another show, the next show, which will probably be out by the time that you do this, the original entranceway to Disney's Animal Kingdom. There were a lot of ideas that got thrown around. Joe Rohde really loved the idea of having this Genesis Gardens, this kind of Garden of Eden with a giant Noah's Ark that you would walk through to get into the park. And, you know, now you have this discussion of religion and using religion and biblical stories in a secular fashion and making money off of biblical stories. And, you know, if you're offending anybody who's not of a certain faith. So we'll have that discussion, which I'm looking forward to hate mail. and then episodes 5 and 6 for the series, at least this first season of the series, episode 5 will be all about the proposed Muppet Studios.
Yes.
That Jim Henson had basically signed the dotted line saying there would be a merger between Jim Henson Productions and Disney, and they were going to build this whole entire space where basically Muppet Vision is now at the Disney Hollywood Studios. And then when he died, you know, there was a fallout between his family and Disney, and we're going to talk a lot about how death can really change, not just that person, obviously they're dead, but like their family, their business, and everything that goes on around them, and how one death can kind of trickle out, you know, to so many different things. And then episode 6, like I said, will be all about Israel and Iran at Epcot, and we'll be talking about safety and security, religious beliefs. We'll talk about politics, and we'll get into a whole mess of different ideas when it comes to the Middle East.
Well, very good. Well, again, Network 1901 is what you subscribe to on iTunes, and you can hear all kinds of stuff that Josh is working on. But keep an eye out for the World That Never Was series, because it is terrific. It is captivating. I listen to podcasts mostly when I'm out running. And yours just met, you know, especially when they hit that 30-minute mark, they just make 3 miles fly by.
Yeah, I strive for 30 minutes. Personally, you know, when I work from home now, but when I drove to work, it was a 30-minute drive. I think the average drive for most Americans is 30 minutes or under. So I try and strive for people who, yeah, are running or, you know, going to the gym, who are making that drive to work or driving home from work. So I try and fit it all in so you can listen to it at one space.
Yeah, and when I say it's like a 60-minute segment, or Josh compares it to NPR, if those things are not your cup of tea, what we are saying is these are very easily digestible. Do give it a listen. Josh Taylor, thanks so much, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey folks, Kevin Kessler from the White Dragon Podcast Network here. And one of the questions I get asked all the time is, Kevin, I want to have a podcast, but I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know anything about audio equipment. I don't know anything about editing. I don't know anything about how to post and promote a podcast. Well, folks, you are in luck, because what if I told you there is a way you can have your podcast with minimal effort from you and still be a part of the White Dragon Podcast Network, joining the family of 9 all-star podcasts that are already broadcasting 7 days a week here on WDPN. For a free consultation, please send an email to kevin@whitedragonpodcastnetwork.com, and I will tell you personally how we can take care of everything from the production to the editing to the hosting to the server space to promotion of your podcast. I want to welcome you into the White Dragon Podcast Network family. So please drop me a line, kevin@whitedragonpodcastnetwork.com. I look forward to welcoming you into the White Dragon Podcast Network.
Hey, WDPN listeners. This is Allie Eibler from the Geek Watchtower. And as you know, we live in the golden age of geek culture. With all the movies, television shows, comic books, video games encompassing the world of geekdom, it can be a real chore to keep up with all of it. Well, here on the White Dragon Podcast Network, we have a little something called the Geek Watchtower. Kevin Kessler, Chris Doherty, and I run down the latest geek news items every Friday morning for you, before we focus on a fandom feature topic of the week. We're talking about everything from Batman to the Avengers, anime, Doctor Who, Disney, Nintendo, and so much more. So make sure you join Kevin, Chris, and I every Friday morning in the Geek Watchtower, where we monitor all the things that geeks watch. Find it on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and of course at WhiteDragonPodcastNetwork.com.
The Extra Magic Hour is just about over. Aww. But first, it's time for the glorious 3-hour finale.
All right, before we wrap up today, one last, like, very small bit of news to get to, and that is that Typhoon Lagoon announced today that they are going to be closing their Shark Reef permanently on October 2nd in order to make way for the building of the brand new family raft ride, Misfortune Falls. Now, Kat, we talked about this. You have never been to Typhoon Lagoon.
No, I have not.
Never been to a Disney water park at all.
No.
Yeah.
Nope, haven't been to a Disney World water park at all.
Okay, so what were you going to ask?
I was going to ask, so is the Shark Reef, like, are there actual sharks there?
There are. I mean, they're tiny. You know.
Oh, okay.
But it is where I think this becomes a problem, and maybe, you know, maybe this isn't a problem. Maybe it's only a problem for me that really enjoyed the Shark Reef, is that, you know, you're adding this family raft ride, and that's nothing particularly special. That's not really a Disney magic kind of experience, where the Shark Reef and the way it was done with the sunken submarine, and it's just something you couldn't do at any other water park. And I think that when Disney starts to get into the bigger, faster slides, more you know, bigger wave pool, all that kind of stuff, you're slowly turning into Wet and Wild. And I don't know what the purpose of having water park property on Disney property is if you're just going to build a run-of-the-mill water park.
Maybe they think that this is going to be competition for, is it Volcano Bay?
Volcano Bay. Yeah, that is right. Yeah. Maybe. I mean, but, you know, to me, part of part of what makes Typhoon Lagoon competition for Volcano Bay, A, is it's the name brand, right? Like, now with Wet and Wild gone, it is the longest standing major water park.
Yeah,
down in Orlando. But also, I think the Shark Reef was so unique. Like, not only the fact that you could snorkel with these sharks, but underwater, the theming of that underwater area was done so well, and it was so pretty to go through. And on top of that, there was the, I guess, sort of anticipation as a kid of the fact that you have to jump into like 60 degree water to have this experience. That was part of, to me, that was also part of the fun, was that sort of last hesitation of, do I want to do this?
But I didn't realize that, like, you could actually, like, swim with them. I was going to ask you if you could, like, pet the sharks, because at the aquarium by my house, you get to pet these. I mean, they're really teeny tiny sharks,
yeah,
but you get to pet them, so.
No, you can. I mean, you have to, you know, they obviously don't want you going after the sharks.
Right.
But
if they pass you, you can.
Yeah, if they pass you, you can touch them. And, you know, I mean, it is a snorkeling, or I guess it was a snorkeling pool, so you could dive down a little bit. And also, you know, there was the statue of Minnie Mouse underneath the water, and so a lot of people have great underwater photos, and I feel like that's one of those things that is going to be missed. I'm sure Misfortune Falls is going to be a lot of fun, but this is, I think, an element or a good example of Disney taking away unique experiences for, I mean, I hate to say thrill rides when you're talking about a family raft ride, but it is a 2-minute water slide versus a chance to really enjoy your surroundings.
Like, I never even heard of this thing before, like, just now, and it sounds really cool. I don't know if I would ever do it, like, because not that I'm particularly afraid of sharks, but that's still just very intimidating.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, what?
Yeah, I mean, I did it 2 or 3 times, and it's a lot of fun. I can't remember how many times as kids we went to Typhoon Lagoon, but I know I did it every time. And it's, you know, and maybe that's it too. Like, the vast majority of people that visit Disney have no sort of nostalgia for Typhoon Lagoon, and this was genuinely the only thing I liked about Typhoon Lagoon. Like, it's the only thing years later that I want to do again at Typhoon Lagoon. I'm just sorry to see it go.
That is really unfortunate. I'm sorry to see it go, and I've never done it.
But Miss Fortune Falls, I guess, is supposed to be open in the spring of 2017. And, you know, I don't know if you were saying that you've been to water parks outside of Disney. You've just never been to the Disney water park. So you can picture those big slides. Those are kind of feats of engineering, right?
Like,
go ahead.
I was going to say, if I think about the family raft rides at the water parks around here, they're all the same. So, like, I'm just like, how is this going to be different? And, like, I haven't done any research on it, so maybe it is different than what I've seen, but I'm kind of disappointed.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I guess aside from the scenery, you know, that's the thing with water slides too, right? The more people you put on it, the heavier the craft you're using, the less you can do to make the ride experience unique.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it'll be interesting. I understand why they got to close Typhoon, or why they have to close the Shark Reef in October. I mean, these things, like I was saying, they are real feats of engineering, the way you keep them up in the air and then build the stairs and all that kind of stuff. And also, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, October is usually about the time Typhoon Lagoon goes down for seasonal refurbishment anyway?
I'm pretty sure, yes.
So, you know, I mean, it makes sense. It just is very, I hate the fact that it will be gone, because that is one of the things, one of the very few things about Typhoon Lagoon that I've been waiting to do with my kids. So that, you know, for me, that sucks.
You gotta like hurry up, book a trip like now
and teach them that there's nothing to be afraid of and how to snorkel. And
yes.
I gotta get it all done in 1 month.
Yes.
All right, that's going to do it for us this week. We will talk to you next week.
Bye.